Good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council, Tuesday, April 9th, 2019. We are at the Veterans Hall. We have a quorum of council members present, and with that, I will ask for a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Mr. Graham, would you lead us in the pledge?
All right, please stand. Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and welcome to all of those in the audience and in TV land. Welcome to the Windy City today. With that, we will begin. Mr. City Attorney, any closed session report this evening?
Mr. Mayor, no reportable action.
Thank you. I'll start with council member reports. Council member Heller, sir.
Yes, I attended a luncheon a few weeks ago with some of the other members of council here. It's regarding some legislation that may be coming down the pike from Sacramento. Obviously, they have authority over what cities do. Affordable housing is a highly discussed subject throughout the state and many parts of the nation. There is something working its way through the Senate, SB 50, which, if passed, could definitely affect what we can and cannot do here with respect to affordable housing in Morro Bay. I encourage you to Google it, read about it, educate yourself about it as best you can. Just so you know, the California League of Cities, which is a statewide agency that a lot of us look to for information, is against SB 50, but you may not be. But it's going to be important legislation if it does get passed, so I encourage you to educate yourself about it. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I also attended, and I appreciate you making comments on that. Council Member Davis.
Yes, thank you. I want to recognize tonight one of our special Morro Bay citizens, Donna Stoll, for the many ways that she supports our community. Donna and her husband Chuck are both active in the Morro Bay Lions Club. And here are a few things that they do in our local Lions Club. Eye screening in our elementary schools, Monday night community dinners, high school scholarships, car donations for people in need, support for the Harbor Festival, the Amgen Tour, Special Olympics, 4th of July celebration, Community Resource Connection, and the Natural History Museum. That's not everything that they do. But I want to thank Donna for always being there when we need volunteers. SLOCOG board met last week, and we recommended the partial closure of four at-grade intersections on Highway 101 between Traffic Way and Los Barrios Road interchanges. That's south of Arroyo Grande. The partial closures mean that left turns will not be allowed, the medians will be closed off, and there'll be right turns only. The City of Arroyo Grande has expressed support, and the next step is for the County Board of Supervisors to take action at their meeting on April 23rd. Also, the SLOCOG draft regional transportation plan is out for public review, and the EIR final action will be taken by the board at our June meeting. And one of the interesting comments we received last week was a new action to advocate removal of billboards, and particularly on Highway 101 south of San Luis Obispo and up on above the grade between Atascadero and Paso Robles. A reminder that our local Coast Guard station will host an open house April 20th, Saturday, from 10 until around 2 o'clock. And this is because Chief Crochet and his crew want to show appreciation for the great support that our community gave them during the government shutdown. They're going to provide food, barbecued hot dogs. It'll be in the vicinity of the North T Pier. All hands will be on deck. The station house will be open for tours, and both of their boats will be open for tours. And our harbor department is partnering with the Coast Guard, and I think they're going to take people on boats and cruise the bay, aren't you? Okay. And I will do office hours this coming Saturday at Sun and Buns from 9 o'clock until 10 o'clock. So if you have anything you want to talk about, come by and see me. Thanks.
Are you buying? I was just asking, are you buying?
Sure.
Great. Okay, you heard it. Councilmember Addis. Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. Yes.
All right. Well, I would like to introduce and celebrate Dr. Leola Dublin McMillan, and I've asked her to stand because she's a new resident in Morro Bay, and I think we're very lucky to have her. Dr. Dublin McMillan was recently named Woman of the Year out of almost a million people of the 24th Congressional District. She was named Woman of the Year by our Congressman Carbajal. She's a Cal Poly lecturer in ethnic studies and women and gender studies, and has made a long-lasting impact on the Central Coast community through her leadership and participation through Just Communities Central Coast, Race Matters Slo County, and the Slo Police Department Police and Communities Together, or the PACT, and has worked to provide justice and equality to marginalized groups throughout our community. So thank you, Dr. Leola Dublin McMillan, for choosing Morro Bay for your new home, and I hope we get to keep you for a while. I'll also share that I went to EBC this month, and there was a presentation from Amazon. And very interestingly, Amazon was asked to name the top three things that would help them bring employees to our area. And the top three things that they said were that we need more diversity on the Central Coast, and that they lose employees, prospective employees, who would be top-level wage earners and head of household wage earners, who don't feel comfortable bringing their families here because there's not enough diversity here on the Central Coast. The second thing they mentioned was housing, and that there's just not enough affordable housing for employees to be able to come here and make a living and have a place to live. And then finally, they said that we need to keep Slo the way it is, and so not ruin the character of our special community. But it really made me think about the efforts in Morro Bay and the conversations we've been having around housing and what we can do to solve some of these issues as we think about economic development and head of household jobs.
Great. Heard that report before, and that is interesting with regard to the attributes that they desire. Amgen tour is coming to Morro Bay. Just a reminder, we're a finishing stage for the race. It is May the 15th. We'll have an all-day-long event with lots of community activities, and so I wanted to remind all of you out there in TV land and here in the audience to come down and participate. If you'd like to volunteer, you can contact Jennifer Little at our TBID department, and we would be happy to have you come and help us receive this wonderful event. We do receive international recognition and exposure, so it's a great opportunity to showcase Morro Bay and all your smiling faces that are in the crowd watching the great race. So that's May the 15th. With that, Mr. City Manager, I'll move to you. Your report, sir.
I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
Nothing to add. Okay. Yeah. Appreciate that. Presentations, we have Bike to Work Day. Peter Williamson. Peter in the audience. Scott, is Peter here? Not sure? Okay. Council member, you want to speak to that? Sure. We'd take that report.
Sure. Bike to Work Day is in May this year, which is the same time that the Amgen tour is. Bike to Work Day is the 17th of May. And As part of that, the city of Morro Bay is going to host a bike breakfast for commuters, people who ride their bikes to work on that day. Come by the city hall between the hours of 7 and 9, I think. Is that right? Or is it 8? 7 and 9? Okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then I will lead a short bike ride for anyone who is interested. It's not very strenuous, and I'm pretty sure we'll have a police escort, so we will be safely covered. There are other activities going on the whole month of May, sponsored by Rideshare, which is a part of SLOCOG. There's a bike to work commute challenge, a bike to school day on May the 8th, bike to coffee day on May the 11th, and bike to work day on the 17th, which is 2 days after the Amgen tour will finish here. There are commuter challenges, and again, a free breakfast Friday, May 17th in front of City Hall if you bring your bike and your helmet.
All right. So. Good deal.
More free food. That's great.
So if I can invite Shayna Paulson from CAPSLO to join us. Council, if you'll come down with me, we do have a proclamation this evening. Join me at the podium. Well, Shayna, welcome. On behalf of the City Council, we have a proclamation for you. This is a proclamation, and I'll just read it to you. Proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, declaring April 2019 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Whereas the Morro Bay City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for the child to learn, that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas April, Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, mark a time to recognize that our community's children are precious assets, that the quality of their early years is our collective responsibility, and that we commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. And whereas Saturday, April 3rd, 2019, will commemorate the Day of the Child at the 41st annual Children's Day in the Plaza celebration from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza. This year's celebration, where children and families will have the opportunity to discover creativity, individuality, diversity, and the arts while exploring community resources. And whereas a variety of other events honoring Month of the Child will provide an opportunity to acknowledge the dedication of individuals and organizations to improve the lives of children and youth in our county, and raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of programs supporting children. Whereas Friday, April 26, 2019, will be the 11th annual Child Abuse Prevention Academy, hosted by the Center for Family Strengthening and Cuesta College, to raise awareness that many children in our midst who suffer daily from abuse and neglect, and to pledge support for strategies that strengthen families and protect our young ones. Whereas in this caring and connected county, we will, including and beyond the Month of the Child, continue to dedicate our efforts to and our resources to investing in the community's future by investing in and supporting our community's children and youth. And may we remember and listen to and watch the children around us, to have patience and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood as exemplified in the San Luis Obispo County Children's Bill of Rights. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Morro Bay City Council is proclaiming April 2019 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month and April 13th, 2019 as Day of the Child. Thank you so much for the work you do, and congratulations, and I'll let you say a few words.
Thank you all. And I know we have a few slides that will be up in a moment, but as was said, my name is Shayna Paulson. I work at the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo in the Child Care Resource Connection, but I'm also representing our San Luis Obispo Child Care Planning Council. And so we are celebrating children this month. There are about 54,000 children in our community, and we care about them and their families. So this weekend is, in fact, Children's Day in the Plaza. It's our 41st annual event. There are a lot of free activities, and you can see a little bit there. If we move forward, you can see. Oh, thank you. So Children's Day in the Plaza this weekend from 10 until 3. It's downtown at the Mission Plaza. There are a lot of other events happening throughout the county, too, so we hope we'll see you at one of them. As was mentioned, on April 26th, Cuesta College will be hosting Child Abuse Prevention Academy, and that's working with the Center for Family Strengthening. The other thing I wanted to encourage everybody to attend is something you may have heard about at the last meeting. Wendy went from First Five, talked about where is the care, and I'll leave some of these flyers out for people if they're interested. On that day, we're going to be talking, about the urgency of issues affecting our local child care and education, including lack of accessibility, lack of affordability, and this rising and persistent early childhood education workforce crisis that we're experiencing in our county. In Morro Bay, there are 5 licensed child care businesses able to serve 177 children. And so in convening this town hall, we're really interested in opening the conversation to the community. Early childhood professionals have been working to tackle the challenge of lack of access and reducing affordability of childcare, and it's time for us to look to the community to be more innovative and to partner and see what we can do to create quality early learning experiences for children throughout our county, but specifically in communities like yours where there are so few choices. So that's going to be the 29th, and as I said, I'll leave this here. Thank you so much. I encourage you to all to keep children in your hearts and your minds and in your planning as you move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I'll invite up Dave, better known as Dead Air Dave, for our business spot. Dave, how do you say your last name?
Sozino,
yeah. Dead Air Dave, welcome, Dave.
You know, esteemed council, it seems like just last meeting I saw all of you, mainly because I was here last meeting and saw you. But I am with 97.3 and 107.9 The Rock, your listener-supported community radio station serving all of the Central Coast, 97.3 on the FM dial for the Estero Bay area, and 107.9 for everybody from Paso Robles down through Atascadero. Again, we are very pleased to be a service to the community, and I personally think it's just fantastic that a community of our size has its own radio station. And it's not just about entertaining everybody, but certainly about informing and serving the community as well. So we encourage organizations in our community that have any sort of charitable benefit coming up to please let us know about it so that we can move forward and help promote and let that word get out amongst all of our community. You can get us the information by sending it to Your Voice at Estero Bay Radio or Your Voice at CentralCoastRadio.org. Your Voice at CentralCoastRadio.org, and we can get in touch with you and you in touch with us. We get all the vital information and spread the word on all of these charitable events happening in our community. Now, speaking of community and supporting things. We, of course, are a nonprofit, non-commercial radio station. We only stay on the air through great donations. And I have to say that in this very room last Saturday, we had our big British invasion party. You wouldn't have recognized the place last week compared to this. It was a great time. Everybody, we filled the place. About 350 people showed up. We had a fantastic time with the band Unfinished Business, playing all the songs from the British invasion of the 60s. And we don't have a final count yet on the money, but we're getting there. Our goal to stay on the air for another year was $21,000, and I feel confident we have come very close to that. And for anybody who wasn't able to make it to the party or hasn't made a donation during our month-long fund drive, remember that. Not pointing at you, Eric. I'm pointing at everybody in that camera right there. You can still make a donation anytime by going to our website, centralcoastradio.org, and there you'll find the donate button. Click it and make a secure, tax-deductible donation so you can help us continue serving the community. So again, I thank everybody for letting us have a moment here to spread the word about the station going into our sixth year, but it's amazing how many people still don't know we exist. So that's 97.3 around here on your FM dial, 107.9 inland a little bit. Tune us in, or remember you can stream us from anywhere at centralcoastradio.org. Thanks again very much for all your support.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that, and congratulations on hopefully a very successful event this past Saturday, the British invasion. What a wonderful thing. And what a great community radio station we have. Lots of great programming, not only music, but also information and lots of community-related items there. Appreciate what you guys do, and glad to be part of that myself. With that, I'll open up general public comment. This is public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Unfortunately, tonight we do not have speaker slips, so no need to fill out a speaker slip, not having one. Any members wishing to come forward, do so now. And this, again, also for items on the agenda that you can't stay to hear. Welcome, Barry.
Good evening, Mayor Heading and Council. Thank you very much. Some time ago, I came before this council, it's been over a month, and asked if there was a date soon where there would be an RFP to do some repairs on the wastewater treatment plant site. Excuse me, on the main lines, repairs on the main lines. I followed that up with a letter emailed to Dr. Heading, and he responded to me. And as yet, I have not heard of any plans or dates when there might be some RFPs going out. I see there was a major problem today on Main Street North. I don't know if that was a spill or a crack or maybe just a truck exercising, but we still do not have any requests for proposals. We have the money. I know we've been collecting it from the first 218 vote for do some repairs, and I wonder if you could tell us perhaps sometime at some future meeting that you could give us a report on when there might be some schedules for some repairs on these pipes. It has nothing to do with the wastewater treatment plant, separate funding. It's in your capital improvement project, but I don't see any dates. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Welcome, Rigmore.
Good evening, City Council and staff. My name is Rigmore Morrow Bay. Since I keep coming down so much, both in support of the City Council and against, I do want to tell you that I truly appreciate what you have put yourself into. You have probably given up some of your freedom and maybe part of your soul. I mentioned last time that I would be in support of a 1% additional sales tax. Easy for me. In Norway, we are used to 25% sales tax. Socialism, where Californians seem to want to go. Anyway, I was amazed at how many people have come forward agreeing, but they also had the same worries as I had. Do we have a city council who would spend it wisely, or will they make decisions as in the old days, when the old guard, the entitled people, the special interest groups, and the ones with power over the city got their way, without any concerns for us regular citizens or our natural resources, our sea animals, and their special and the special beauty Morro Bay is already endowed with. Well, that is a big question. Just be fair to all. That brings me back to the torn down Sir Street stairs out here. Yes, you have told us that the insurance company said they needed to go. They were not maintained over the last 75 years, so who is to blame for that? I had dreams about beating up Mr. Leivik, but maybe he is not all to blame, and I also love him too much. But I do think, as you probably all were taught as kids, you do a mistake, you do everything in your power to correct it. So, if we could save you $600,000, would you support giving $200,000 towards new workable stairs with the help of volunteers and Cal Poly, like that wonderful girl from Cal Poly suggested at the last meeting? Or if not 200, would you go for 150 or 100? Someone up there, or our manager or staff, must be smart enough to come up with an arrangement, unless there is a hidden agenda we do not understand. Many people tell me, follow the money. Well, I do not understand. What money? I'm lost. And by the way, get going with the sewer plant, and I would appreciate if someone would correct, put that painting straight. Thank you.
Thank you, especially that last comment. We appreciate that. Public comment is open for items either on the agenda that you can't stay for or items not on the agenda. Welcome, Bill.
That's a tough one to follow. Bill Martin, Morro Bay. Good evening. Real quick, I would say on Rigmore's stairs that came down, I believe if you had volunteers cutting the trail, I've cut trails, I've done roads with shovels, you could probably do a trail with volunteers for probably $5,000. You know, I don't think you need $150,000, but if you just got a group of people out there on a weekend, it's only 50 foot up and down that cliff. You could S-turn down there with probably four people and a shovel in an afternoon, just to let you know whether ADA would be happy with it or not. You could improve it in the future, but that's just one solution rather than $800,000 or $1 million. What I'm actually here to talk about is to find out if the city council, I'll kind of back up. Last time I talked, Scott Graham mentioned that it's already gone to Coastal, the LCP, or our draft, and in that draft they're talking about upzoning the back part of the bay. I've talked about this time and time again. And I wasn't sure this has to come back to City Council. And I didn't know if the City Council is actually for approving the upzoning of the harbor. This is from the boat launch south, almost to not the inn at Morro Bay, but close to it. Currently, the zoning only allows for recreational boating and fishing. There's an overlay mixed harbor use zone that exists right now. That is being proposed to be eliminated, and by eliminating that, you'll be able to allow all the industrial ships, everything else can come into this back part of the bay. And this was never the intent. It was always from the boat launch south was to keep it more low-key because it's very sensitive. And like you say, sometimes it's best to leave something the way it is. Back in the 1960s, there were tugs down at the inn at Morro Bay, and they were made to move north to the Embarcadero because of the sensitivity. And I'm just kind of, again, knowing that this has already gone to coastal staff right now, and for approval for the upzoning of this part of the bay, I wanted to bring it to your attention that I don't think it should be upzoned. It should be left alone and left as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. This is a general public comment for items either on the agenda that you can't stay for or items not on the agenda. Looks like we have some, speaking of Month of the Child, some young people. Welcome. Folks photo opportunity.
Hi, my name is Demi, and I am a second grader at Delmar Elementary, and I would like to share with you some of our after-school activities that we have. A few that the school runs are homework club, chess club, band club, and drama club. The school hosts but does not run others. Clubs as well, like Infinite Music, Spanish Class, the Good News Club, Big Brother and Big Sisters, and Slow Symphony Strings Program. Students have a variety of activities to choose from, and they can discover what they like.
Great. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Jocelyn, and I am a fifth grader at Delmar Elementary, and I will be giving you an update on fifth grade camp. Due to the weather, we had to postpone camp to the week of April 23rd. We had a rummage sale which raised $1,500. We are still fundraising for camp. If you are interested in sponsoring a student, please call the office at 805-771-1858. Now we will share with you our fundraiser called Pennies for Patients.
Every student gets a box to put in loose change or money they raise.
The fundraiser ends on April 18th, and the money raised goes to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed.
Great job, you guys. It's always great to have you young people here. Debbie and Jocelyn, thank you for representing your school. It sounds like you're doing some great things for the community. I just want to repeat that phone number for donations to help with the camp trip. That's 805-771-1858. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Good. And Pennies for Patients, where can we give you the money? Because we have lots of people here that want to donate to that.
Go to the school and stop by the office and then put in any loose change or money.
Great.
Into a big bucket we have up there.
Great. Thank you guys for coming out tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Say hello to your principal for us.
Hi.
Great. Public comment is still open for items either on the agenda or not on the agenda.
Was on the agenda. So public comment for Bike to Work Day. There we go. Thank you, Councilmember Davis. I'll give you the quick version. I don't think I have access to the PowerPoint. I want to keep this thing moving for you guys. I guess I was on another city council schedule. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So good evening, Mayor Heading, council members. My name is Peter. I work at the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, Slow Caucus, or Regions Agency, responsible for transportation planning and funding. We have Bike Month almost upon us in May, and we have a lot going on. We have our commuter challenge. We have Bike to School Day, Bike to Coffee Day, and Bike to Work Day, along with all the usual May fun. So from May 1st through Bike to Work Day, which is on May 17th, you can join your workplace, department, the community in our annual Bike to Work Day commuter challenge, and the winning entities will steal a respective title from French Hospital Planning and Building, SHRAM, and the Caltrans champion from last year. Looks like I do have the PowerPoint. Is that allowed? There it is, commuter challenge. And then it's multimodal as well, so even if you're carpooling, taking the bus, etc., you can get involved with that challenge. And we have sort of a point structure to award bikes a little bit more since it is Bike Month. All right. And a little twist for the North Coast, anybody that's doing a multimodal, their mileage counts for the entirety of the trip. So bus plus bike would be worth a lot more for your team. So that will be at irideshare.org. And then any parents or teachers here, I saw some kids, so I'm guessing that there are. Don't miss National Bike to School Day on May 8th. We have 17 schools participating this year and counting. We have the Montessori Charter. It's a private school in Morro Bay. We don't have any of the other Morro Bay schools yet, so if your kid's school isn't involved, reach out to us. More info, slowsaferoutes.org. New initiative of Bike Month is this Bike to Coffee Day concept. Sort of get reacquainted with your bike in a weekend environment. We want to thank Morro Bay Coffee Company for stepping up. You get a free coffee if you bike in there that Saturday. So definitely patron them. You can learn more at rideshare.org/coffee. And then I was going to walk you through the Bike to Work Day. It's Friday, May 17th, by far the biggest celebration of biking in our region. Longtime followers might want to grab a Bike to Work Day shirt. That's at rideshare.org/store. And then we have all of our mini stations here in Morro Bay. It will be at City Hall, hosted by the Chamber again, and it will be a pretty good time. And then We also have our evening stations this year as a first, and we have a Los Osos breakfast station for the first time this year. So if you're headed south, definitely swing by the Los Osos Library. And then, you know, pedal with a politician is kind of a cool thing, right? So Councilmember Davis would love to give you a little loop over the rock and back for some... it's always more fun to get there together. It's also more safe, so we encourage everyone to get involved with that. We have like an event page dedicated to iRideShare.org where you can team up with other locals and bike there together, which is pretty cool. All right, free food. Obviously, the biggest reason to get out that day is the free food. It's going to be breakfast quesadillas and coffee, usually in Morro Bay. Probably going to be the same thing this year. It'll be a /BTWD off the RideShare.org if you want to keep an eye on that. After chomping down on some energy, you'll definitely want to grab your bag of goodies. It's in a fanny pack this year. I was hoping I could get you a fanny pack. You stand up and model it, but that's not going to happen now. So, grab the bag of goodies. It's going to be awesome. And then we have a chance to win a $1,500 folding electric bike. Oh, so nice. Make sure that you take a moment to scan a QR code. I didn't know this, but you can pull up your camera apparently on your phone and just like pops up the website. Fill out that form, enter for your chance to win. May the odds be ever in your favor. And then we have our Facebook Live kind of wrap-up that we'll do. You don't have to be present to win. We'll be at one of the evening stations. We'll announce who wins that folding electric bike. We'll announce who wins our challenge categories, and that'll be at 5:30 p.m. You don't have to have a Facebook. You can go to that direct URL, which is just facebook.com/rideshare. And then a quick reminder, Bike Month is still a thing. It's in May, and it's at slowshift.org, year-round events for people that like biking and bike-enthused events. So check that out. You can download the Google Calendar of events right to your phone. It's pretty awesome. So that's it. If you have any questions, I left some cards in the back. Email info@rideshare.org is good, too. If you have any questions, I don't know if that's allowed for public comments.
I just wanted to tell you, Peter, thank you for coming. Councilmember Davis already gave your report, so now that we've heard it twice, it's great. We'll be sure to be there. Appreciate all that SLOCOG does, and thanks for coming out tonight.
All right.
Look forward to seeing you at the bike ride.
See you out there.
All right.
Thanks.
Cool. Public comment is still open. Items on the agenda you can't stay for, or items not on the agenda. And welcome, Ms. Chamber Director Erica.
Thank you very much. And I have a little, of course it was a slide, now the overhead, so if AGB can come out. But thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council, City Staff, Erica Crawford with the Morro Bay Chamber, just here to provide a few quick updates. And I'll do the fun one first, which is that we're having a mixer tomorrow at Pizza Port, 5:30 to 7:30. Come one, come all. And then the Chamber has been actively connecting with our members, community leaders, and the business community at large on economic development. We've been trying to understand and prioritize the kind of, quote, what to do from a long list of what could be done to make demonstrable, immediate, positive impact on Morro Bay's economy. We released a survey via our weekly e-blast. It goes out to about 1,600 people, employees, business owners, community members, and have received just 27 responses so far. But I still wanted to update the council tonight with sort of the top-ranking items from the survey identified to, quote, do now. So those top five, as we see now, and this is just early stages, 56% of survey respondents said to create action teams to redevelop opportunity sites such as the Morro Bay Power Plant, Bank of America lot, and empty lot by Del Mar Park. 52% said to market the city to attract new investment, something akin to a It's a New Day in the Bay campaign. 50% of survey respondents said to deploy high-speed fiber citywide. 47% said to lobby Caltrans for better highway signage to connect in with our wayfinding program within the city limits. And 40% said to expedite all permits for commercial development currently in the pipeline. And we gave examples as cannabis, the new hotel at Highway 41 and Centennial Plaza. So again, this is just 27 responses, but it's not the only outreach that we've been up to by any means. We've been talking a lot. So in addition to direct outreach to business, our Government Affairs Committee, our board directors, we've been communicating with the EVC, the Hourglass Project, city staff, some of you also elected officials. And it's all been an effort to help our chamber most effectively weigh in at the goals meeting on the 18th, where you will be setting your forecasting or kind of setting your goals for the next 2 years. So I hope that this little update is taken as just that. It's little. We will look forward to coming back with more fleshed out comment on the 18th for you. A couple more announcements. What's up there is that I want to invite the community to join the chamber on April 18th at 9 a.m. to tour the J-Wing Makerspace at Morbay High School. This is a creative space. It's both for students and the community, businesses as well, to access. And it's part of the school's transition from STEM to STEAM. So it's, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math with the art and design element added in. And finally, the Chamber and the Community Development Department tomorrow are holding the Embarcadero Focus Group. That'll be at Thai Bounty / Milanes. And that will be to introduce the first draft of wayfinding signage to that district. And the meeting is at 8:30 a.m. and should go about an hour. That's it.
What was the date on that? I'm sorry.
The Embarcadero Focus Group's tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Got it.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Appreciate that. Public comment is still open. Welcome, Ken.
Good evening, folks. Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay, 24 years coming up. By the way, that Bank of America place would be a great place for a police station. Just wonderful. tonight, I'm here to represent the Cruisin' Morro Bay Car Show. 23rd years, if you can believe that or not. That's coming up here. So what we're looking for is individuals who'd like to, like Councilman Davis promotes and buys trophies for these participants. We don't do any judging. You can choose the car you want. If you don't want to do that, we have people that will go around and pick out a vehicle for you. So it's a great event. This year we seem to be on track for a little over 500 cars. So far we have a person from Nashville, Tennessee, San Antonio, Texas, Beaverton, Oregon, Preston, Indiana, and from my home country, Delta, British Columbia. So it's great. To keep in mind that we've now focused on bringing people in on Thursday evening that stay Thursday evening, Friday, and Saturday. We lose a lot of people on Sunday because they travel back. Out of the 550 registrants last year, 234 came and picked up their packets on Thursday evening, keeping in mind that 10 to 12% are only from this county. So we're to bring them in town. So we would appreciate it if you can offer up small trophies for $30. Our larger ones, quote, are $100. Again, there's no judging, so you can just go ahead and keep that. A couple of other things, if you don't mind. TBID, I hope you can keep up with their grants. Wonderful sponsorship there. If you can do that, we would like to see you do that. And one of the other major pet things is, if are we going to do anything with the speed limit on Highway 41 approaching Ironwood Avenue? We've had several accidents out there, and what happens is they're still coming in there at 50 miles an hour, maybe a little bit more. And what happens is somebody will be queued up to turn left, going north onto Ironwood Avenue. And another car is going to turn right, and the guy behind him, who's doing 50 miles an hour, comes around. And so far, there hasn't been a head-on like that, but something needs to be done. I know it takes a long time for that to happen, but I believe that 40-mile-hour speed limit should be put back around the curve at the city limits. If you can take a look at that truly would be appreciated. Yeah. Thanks again. I appreciate your time. Cruisin' Morro Bay Car Show, May 2nd through the 5th. Appreciate it. And morrobaycarshow.org if you need all the information about where the cruise is on Friday evening, where to stage your cars, or where to register. Thanks ever so much for your time.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate that. Great event. Public comment is still open for items either on the agenda that you can't stay for or items not on the agenda. Welcome, Susan.
Hi. Susan Stewart. Longtime resident in Morro Bay and a business owner, and always buy trophies for the car show. It's a great event. Couple things. I wanted to thank y'all for the tree lighting. The ambiance of the nighttime in the downtown is really improved, more inviting, feels safer, and visitors are mentioning it's making an impression. Also wanted to mention that I placed an online service request this morning regarding a large tree branch that had fallen on a planter in the sidewalk and all in downtown, and it was cleared away. Thank you so much. Public Works, you know, responds to those comments, and I'd encourage everybody, instead of sitting back and grumbling and complaining, go ahead and fill out the little online form. It's super easy to do. Also wanted to comment on item C2. It may go past my bedtime, so I'm not sure I'll still be here. Let you know, I was looking through some files on my computer, which is old, and some of them I can't even open anymore, but I used to be chair of the Morro Bay Promotions Committee. And in 2009, the CPC had a budget of $110,000 to promote the entire city. The development of the T-bid brought a healthy infusion of funds for the promotion of our lodging community, and by virtue of such, for our community at large. We owe a tremendous amount to the T-bid and to our hoteliers, both for their contribution to the general fund and to their active role in promoting our town. At the same time, at this time of impending financial crisis in our city, I think it's important that we actively pursue diversifying types of business revenues in our community. Tourism plays a huge role in our economy, but we cannot and should not rely on it as our only economic driver. So if extra monies from the general fund can be made available, I would like to see them directed towards actions which will work towards advancing more diverse avenues of economic development and improvement of the general business climate as staff recommends. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate that. Public comment is still open for items either on the agenda you can't stay for or items not on the agenda. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Linda Winters. I'm a resident of Morro Bay for 25 years, and I also own and live in a mobile home park in one of our 15 mobile home parks here in Morro Bay. 2 weeks ago, I spoke about how all mobile home parks are our last bastion of affordable housing. We are in a crisis. The 700,000 mobile homes and 513,000 people that live in those mobile homes are all in jeopardy. We own our own homes, our mobile homes, manufactured homes, but must rent the land that they are parked on. We are mobile home owners and renters at the same time. Park owners are actively buying older mobile home parks all over the state, purchasing them at low prices, and then the longtime residents receive notices that their rents are doubled, even tripled, without much justification. This involves families, retirees, senior citizens on fixed incomes, our state's lowest income population. The most vulnerable are the victims. Our only hope, our only possible salvation, comes with a bill that is going before the legislature right now, AB 705. It's entitled the Park Closure Protection Bill, authored by Assemblyman Mark Stone. This bill requires park owners that want to make maximum dollars at the expense of the residents to protect those residents. Number one way of protecting them is if the park owners attempt to convert the parks to find another place for the mobile home owners to be able to reside. There are no such places. Number two, the park owners must buy out the existing mobile homes at fair market prices to give residents a chance to find new places to live. Please, please, for the sake of the 513,000 people that own manufactured homes, I'm one of them, in California, call your representatives, ask them to please support AB 705 so that we can feel secure that our homes will remain safe. We have mobile home parks right here in Morro Bay that have been purchased by these corporations. This is happening to your neighbors, members of your community. Please remember, support AB 705, authored by Mark Stone. It goes to the legislature on April 24th. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate that. Public comment is still open. Items on the agenda that you can't stay for or items not on the agenda. Scanning the audience. Seeing no activity or movement, I will close public comment, bring it back here to council. Made a few notes for response. Mr. Brannon, once again, has brought up the idea, the notion of the schedule for capital improvements for the One Water Plan and replacement of pipes. I believe in the email response, I directed a staff to send him the schedule for the capital improvements on the One Water Plan. But Mr. Liebig, maybe you could update us on his questions regarding that and when they will happen. He specifically asked about an RFP going out for that as well.
Sure. Some of them will require an RFP to go out. Some of them, like a project that we're working on right now in-house off of San Jacinto and North Morro Bay to do a pipe bursting project on a section of sewer main, we're doing the design in-house, and we'll put that out to bid probably in the next few weeks. We're working with our One Water consultant that we still have budget left in that contract to package some projects together that make sense to do at the same time. Those will be coming out shortly. We do have, as you all know, limited resources for staffing, and a big effort is to complete our pavement preservation, and we're at the last throes of that right now as the striper is in town doing that work, so we can commit some more resources to our utility capital improvements.
Thank you. Then I had, Scott, any update on the stairs? I know you met with a few people about the Surf Street stairs. And I'll just also mention that I think it would be appropriate to let the community know that on May the 18th at 6 p.m. we will be having the goal-setting session, and that would maybe be something that we'd look at as a prioritization, but I'll let you comment on that.
Sure thing. The correction on that, the date is April 18th, Thursday, April 18th, not May.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
April.
Yeah. In short, we've looked at this issue and really tried to brainstorm around ways of creating a cheaper project, if you will. But there's no real way around ADA. It's not something we want to put ourselves in a position just to bring our lawsuit upon ourselves, especially after we've had, you know, our insurance company tell us we need to remove it immediately, and if there's any replacement that they have to provide for ADA. And in order to do that requires switchbacks along that along the hillside, and that is a pretty expensive process. The number we put out there, around $800,000, does include a pretty significant contingency, which you're supposed to do before you have a lot of more information. The idea of using volunteers or Cal Poly is great. That could probably save $50,000 off that ticket price, but most of the work is around engineering, and then actual construction requires professionals to complete. So I don't see how we could save significant funds. And this really comes down to a question of priorities for City Council. We will be talking about an item later tonight. We are in a position where we'll be about $325,000 deficit going into next fiscal year. We already do not fund capital projects as it is. So the idea that we're looking forward into seeking new revenue opportunities is an important discussion to help open up opportunities for funding much needed capital, of which the stairs would be one of those considerations. But that we're not moving any forward unless we're directed to do so by council, really looking to see where it shakes out in priorities through the budget process.
Great, thank you. Appreciate that. Mr. Graham, Mr. Martoni had some questions about the local coastal plan, general plan, and the back part of the bay.
We've covered this a couple of different times now. Nothing's changed. That's gone through the planning process, through the General Plan Advisory Committee, and through your Planning Commission. The language related to that area of the city has changed. He's correct. Mr. Martini has made presentations several times, not both just before the City Council, but also for the Planning Commission. The draft language removes that, the draft document removes that language. The draft Plan Morro Bay is has been reviewed by the Coastal Commission, the public draft has, and we're going through all of the comments and that they've provided in edits right now. We're almost done. We're going to have one more meeting with them, and then we'll be complete with that. We'll be redrafting it, and you'll have your final public draft that will be coming forward back through your Planning Commission for recommendation onto City Council. Certainly Mr. Martini can show up to those to that meeting and speak with the Planning Commission at that time, and if they direct changes, then you'll see that coming forward. If not, then you'll get it without that change. That's sort of the status and where things stand currently.
Okay. Thank you. I think that was it in terms of items to respond to. Did I miss anything specifically? I do have pretty extensive notes. Any comments?
Yeah, Mr. Vesterfeld talked about speed limit on Highway 41. Right. Have we done a recent speed survey out there?
That section of highway is maintained by Caltrans, and they would be doing the speed survey out there. I can't remember if that section is enforced by RPD or if it's Highway Patrol. We go out to city limits, but Caltrans is the one that sets the speed limit. And I believe they did a radar survey within the last 5 years. They did it after we did our citywide survey, but they do have set speed limits based on a engineering traffic study.
Thank you. Thanks for catching that. Appreciate that. That ends public comment. We will move to consent agenda. I'll open it up for any public comment on consent items. The floor is open. Welcome. Jane?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council, and staff members. My name's Jane Heath. I represent Bill Martoni and Bernadette Pekarik, who are the upland property owners to water lease sites 34, 35, and 36W. I'm here to address consent item A6. First, I just want to thank staff, particularly Mr. Endersby, for substantive changes he made to the draft RFP in part with in collaboration with the upland owners, and we appreciate that. There is one concern, though, remaining that's not addressed and some additional imperative that occurred just today. Some council members may remember that in August of 2017, the current leaseholder requested an extension of the lease on 34W. That's the four boat slips. My clients objected chiefly on the basis that the lease terms called for no extension and the leaseholder had made promises to repair existing facilities and had not followed through with that. My clients expressed concern in 2017 that two pilings had already rotted through and a third was failing. They were worried that a strong wind event would cause the entire dock to fail. Now all three pilings are gone, with only one single piling remaining holding onto the dock. So this afternoon, in this terrible wind, the dock and the boats are requiring extraordinary measures to keep the whole structure together and keep the boats from breaking off and becoming loose in the bay, which it's requiring Harbor District resources and all necessitated by the failure of the current leaseholder to maintain the structure. So the RFP calls for the new lease to be approved and inaugurated in winter or spring of 2020. You have the RFP you have before you will not give you a lease until up to a year from now. Staff has requested that the current leaseholder, who's neglected the lease improvements, remain in possession until the new lease is awarded, which is up to another year. The landowner respectfully requests that council direct negotiation and signing of a new lease on an expedited schedule. Specifically, you'll see on Section 6, the tentative proposal schedule, the evaluation will occur in August or September, and the proposed lessee will be identified, but the proposal contemplates another 6 months for plans and lease negotiations. Since the only possible use of that lease site because of the access issues across the overland is the four boat slips, there doesn't seem to be any reason to do that or to take that amount of time to consider it. And we would therefore request that that schedule be expedited and a new lease be awarded. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Public comment is open for the consent agenda. Those wanting to come forward, do so now. Welcome back. Mr. Martoni.
Thank you again, Bill Martoni, Morro Bay. Yeah, I just wanted to follow up a little bit, and it's mainly the city has a big liability right now on that 34W lease site. I think it was back in around, it's about approximately 4 years ago in 2015, we sent photos to the harbor director. There's four piles, just to kind of describe it a little more in detail, wooden piles that support the four boat slips in the shallow water. Two of those actually caved over, one in about 2015, one in about 2016 or 17, and they actually doubled over, and I have the pictures of them floating in the bay, the creosoted piles. And this was over 5 years ago. The third pile right now, you can look through it. It's totally rotted through. So there's only one single pile at this point. With the stress of these the boats against it, and the winds today were 60 miles an hour, we were photographing it, and the actual one of the fingers out was actually bowing out from the pressure of the boat, almost ready to give away. So the main thing is, at this point, with the lack of maintenance in the past, it really is a big liability for the city to kind of continue on the way it is, and the lack of maintenance that has taken place over the last 4 years. And this was notification that we put in over 4 years ago to this situation. So I just wanted to just kind of clarify the liability of if this whole place goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Public comment is open for any items on the consent agenda. Any further looking, scanning the audience, seeing no members coming forward, we'll close public comment. I will go ahead and pull A6. Any other items to pull? No. Okay, so I'll take a motion for approval of A1 through 5, 7, and 8.
I make that motion.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Davis, second by Councilmember Addis. Roll call vote.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0-1 with Councilmember McPherson absent.
So I'm going to just pull out A6 here and ask Mr. Endersby to comment on, one, the issue of lack of maintenance and what could be a public safety issue or perceived public safety issue, and then also possibly speak to the expedited request for schedule on the RFP.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll come to the second part, expedited schedule. I'm just going through the RFP right now and finding the schedule. We're currently on hold over the existing tenant. There's nothing.
Can't hear you.
I stopped. Pause for a second. There's nothing to prevent the city from entering into a new lease agreement with whoever comes out of this RFP sooner in an interim basis. Typically, as you know, when we come up with a redevelopment project proposal that. Once it gets through concept plan approval through community development, that's when we inaugurate the long-term lease for it. We've done some short-term leases recently, on Off the Hook is one, and there's been a couple others in recent years where we've gone on short-term interim leases while the new guy, the new person on the lease side has come in and pursue their proposal through the permitting process. So there's nothing to prevent us to do that sooner, to expedite that process so that we're not on the same leaseholder and the same lease on holdover until... as Ms. Heath spoke about, as we go through the planning and permitting process into next year and early, into spring and summer next year. So there's nothing to prevent us from doing that. Regarding the first part, the existing leaseholder has not done very much, if anything, to that lease site in recent years. Absolutely, I agree with that. It's largely, I believe, because we've just been on holdover. And going through this process, we've been RFPing or dealing with this RFP for several years now. I'd have to go back and see what the requirements were under the existing lease. I know we got an extension years ago, I want to say prior to my tenure as Harvard director, but it may have been shortly thereafter, but I believe it was before, where he got a maybe a 5 or 7 year extension, a short-term extension, to do some improvements. I'd have to go back and see what those improvements were and whether or not they were done. I do know that there were some, and currently are some, existing piling problems. I wasn't aware of a third piling having an issue down there, but I'll certainly look into that tomorrow, the very first thing, and see what's going on down there and see how many boats he has and go from there.
Is there a proposed potential expedited schedule that we could agree to tonight that you think would be doable? I'm looking at page 79 of the agenda, page 19 of the tentative proposal.
Yeah, so, and that's the page. As I spoke, I think we've got to have the RFP out there long enough to get viable proposals. Currently, as proposed, if we issue the RFP this week, Friday, our deadline is August 9th. So we could shorten that up. We could put language in there. And if we did shorten it up, I would recommend putting language in there that reserves the right of the city to extend the timeline for the RFP, depending on if we receive any proposals. My concern being, if we don't receive any proposals in a short-term basis, in a shorter-term basis, we'd end up having to do this whole process over again and reissue. So I'd recommend putting some language in there that allows the city to extend the deadline of the RFP if no proposals are received. But that's really the shortest thing. The main thing that we could shorten up would be that soak time for the RFP process. Getting through it, we've got to put together a panel. We'll put together that as quickly as you can and get through that as quickly as you can. I don't have a long time period for that. The bigger time period, once proposals are looked at and there's a winning proposer or the new leaseholder there, is getting through the concept plan approval through community development and going through the CUP process. That takes some time. And I think that's where there's an opportunity for us to do an interim lease in the interim basis, to not keep the existing leaseholder in situation on holdover.
So is council amenable to, it sounds like we have potentially a safety issue and or an issue with the existing lease site with regard to the current leaseholder potentially not being accountable for maintenance and or issues associated with maintaining the lease. I would personally like to see maybe a report back at the next meeting on that site and what the issues specifically are. I know it's hard to pull them out of the hat right now this evening, but I think it's important to address that, especially given the winds today and what we've seen out there in the bay. And then secondarily, I hate to postpone this and have it come back. Is there concurrence amongst us to move more quickly on this and get this done? Councilman Heller? Heller?
Yeah. The existing docks with the four boats, I see that as a separate issue, and that's where most of the liability is. I've seen those docks. I agree with the public comment that they're in great disrepair. What are our options to get something done there quickly?
First option is look at what's in the existing lease and what its requirements were and what may not have been completed and press the existing leaseholder on that.
Okay, and how long do you think that process would have to take at the most?
I'll start looking at that immediately. The hammer we typically have for our leaseholders and lease compliance is potential loss of their lease. We've already put it out to RFP. It's already going to go out to public, so I don't know what the incentive will be there or what other legal alternatives we might have, and maybe city attorney can weigh in on
so
that.
So we're dependent on a new person coming in to make the repairs, basically.
Potentially.
Picking that up, is that right?
I said I'll review the existing lease and see what that leaseholder's requirements were and what he did or did not do.
So we don't have funds available to make those kinds of repairs. It's contingent upon someone else picking up the lease for those.
Or the city moving in and taking care of it.
And could we break that part out of the RFP for the balance of the leases?
Not following. Break what part out?
With the four boats and the damaged docks.
I'm still not following, sorry.
It's two separate issues. One is holding the current leaseholder accountable, right. And second is the timeline on the RFP. There's nothing
right,
in
but,
the current.
But I'm asking the RFP could be split into two RFPs. One for the water leases that are, we're not talking about, and one for the docks that are the hazard.
I got you.
Yeah, so currently the RFP is structured so that either one or both sites can be bid together. In other words, we could get a proposal just for this site in question mm-hmm. with these slips on it and be completely separate of the other two lease sites that are combined, 35, 36, or somebody could propose for both. Mm-hmm. So it's already structured that way to although not from a process standpoint, it's the same timeline, the same process. They are already currently structured so that people can respond separately.
Okay. So I'd suggest a shorter timeline for the docks where the boats are, frankly, and then we can discuss the timeline for the balance of the leases.
Yeah. Chris, maybe you could weigh in on this. To me, it's an accountability issue for the current leaseholder, and if there's non-compliance or non-performance, we should have options to address that, and maybe you know what those are. Or
well, as the harbor director was indicating, we need to take a look at the lease right now, but presumably if there is something in there that property should be maintained better than it is right now, there should be an enforcement mechanism in there. The question will just simply be whether or not the current property owner will respond to our requests and how far the city wants to take enforcement. Something like this, the end of the road is taking them to court and enforcing the city's rights. But I think we'd start with review of the lease, see if they're in breach of the lease right now, and then go ahead and pursue enforcement if they're not following the lease.
Okay, and we could have a report back at the next meeting on what the essentials are of that, and then shortening the overall process for the current RFP is something that we all, I see heads nodding. Yeah,
question.
Comment?
Mm-hmm. Just a question.
Question, sure.
Have we ever tried enforcing with this leaseholder?
Not on this current leaseholder.
Not the current lease. We've never tried enforcement.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is agreement that we would like to shorten the RFP time. I hesitate to wait 2 weeks and bring it back. I don't know if we can craft it right now, but I don't want to spend a lot of time. It's important to do it correctly. So rather than trying to just come up with dates, what I would propose is that we not approve it, send it back, and ask it to come back with a shortened timeline for the RFP process because of the issues that have been raised. Is everybody in agreement with that?
I would second that.
Okay. So a motion by myself to not approve this and bring it back with a shortened RFP timeline, second by Councilmember Davis, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Mayor Heading.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
And Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Good, and thank you for that. And just, again, as a reminder, we'll be looking for a report next time on the current leaseholder and what the options are with the current lease. Thank you. We'll move forward then. Let's get my agenda back. Brings us to item number C-1. This is adoption of Resolution 22-19 approving a supplemental lease agreement, United States Coast Guard Station, Morro Bay Building lease site for building expansion purposes located on lease site 141 at 1279 Embarcadero. And I'll turn it over again to Mr. Andersby. Help.
So I'll slowly move forward as AGP gets that PowerPoint up, which you have on your dais as well. So we're looking at approving a resolution that approves a supplemental lease agreement for the Coast Guard Station Morro Bay to enable their building expansion project that's been in the works for several years now. So our purpose here is to get the resolution approved, and which approves a supplemental lease agreement, which I'm going to be calling the SLA, more acronyms, for the Coast Guard to build their approximate 800 square foot building addition. I'm not proposing any alternatives. Fiscally, there's a currently in the agreement, there's a one-time $75,000 offset fee paid by the Coast Guard for their use of the approximately 850 square feet of parking lot space that they're going to move into with this approximately 800 square foot building expansion. So in other words, it's the easternmost five spaces that immediately front their building, and then it affects the sixth space that's right in front of our office as well, right there on the corner. And so they've agreed to pay a $75,000 fee to take care of the impacts on the parking lot there. Historically, the Coast Guard and the city have had a very great working relationship, and the city's been very supportive of the Coast Guard and their mission. They've been here for probably since after World War II. The Coast Guard moved in. When I got here in the early 90s, they had 95-foot Coast Guard cutters, and they downgraded those to 87s and then changed into a search and rescue detachment. The building that was built there today, that's approximately 3,500 square feet, was permitted and built in the late 80s, early 90s for a completely different mission is when the two cutters were still here. So it was really an administrative and support building for the cutters. Those cutters moved off. I think they went down to South America and went to a foreign country. And the Coast Guard station turned into a search and rescue detachment, and then finally a motor lifeboat station that it is today with the original 44-foot motor lifeboats and then the motor lifeboats they have today. The building has been morphed and adapted, painted 100 times over, rearranged inside I don't know how many times to try and continually morph for their needs and uses. The bottom line is it was never built really big enough and for the mission that they have now, which is overnight crew needs. When there's heavy weather, they've got to have a crew there overnight, really two crews overnight, to one back up the other. They don't send out one boat at once when it's heavy weather. They put both boats out in pairs for safety. And so the station as it is today is really too small and inadequate for their existing mission, but they're stuck on their footprint. The current lease was inaugurated in 1990. It was a 49-year lease. It expires in 2039 for the whopping lease payment of $1 a year. And then of issue also in this whole process is in the Coast Guard, this has been one of their concerns. I think they brought this to the council in closed session and open session a couple times. Is their concern that they can't billet women? In other words, they can't station women in the current station because their mission parameters require their overnight accommodations, and they just can't do it with the size of station they have. They may be the only station in the nation that still has this issue. They're recognizing this issue and trying to get it corrected with this additional help, but it won't solve the problem. They need a lot more space than they have now. So over about the last 15, maybe 20 years, the Coast Guard has worked with the city on many iterations of potential building improvements to get their station up to better specifications for what they've been trying to do. There's been joint Harbor Department Coast Guard projects over the years that didn't get as far as planning commission, but went pretty far in the planning stages in terms of getting drawings done. For various reasons, none of them ever came to fruition. The city couldn't afford to build a project on its own without Coast Guard assistance. Coast Guard could only commit to a series of one-year lease payments, which for our lenders wasn't working. And so none of those projects over the last 15, 20 years that I've been involved ever went anywhere until 2013. Coast Guard approached the city with about $1.4 million that they said they had that reverted from other projects that weren't done in the nation. To build them what they were purporting to be about 2,500 square feet at the time, and they were looking for a new location to build an independent building to get some more space for their station. And that they had to be under contract in this current federal fiscal year 2019. So in 2013, we staff and with council as well, over about a five-year period, worked with the Coast Guard, looked at many locations, went through the Harbor Advisory Board a couple times to vet issues, looked at over by Coleman Beach, looked at the Triangle lot, talked to then power plant owners or Dynegy, really couldn't find anything that worked great. What the two locations that were finally really looked at and settled upon as being real possibilities were either our Harbor Department office building space or the space where the restroom is right next to us that we call the North T Pier restroom, which is actually a relatively vacant lease site. It's got just that restroom in it. So in 2014, the City Council approved a consent of landowner, a COL, for the Coast Guard to use the T-Pier restroom site with the option to potentially use our harbor office site if the harbor department and city could determine a way to replace our office and move it, because we were willing at the time to move over to the restroom site. Trouble with that is, as we know, we've got some funding problems in the city, and we didn't have any funding set aside for that. We proposed to the Coast Guard of them paying fair market rent that could have possibly enabled us to do loan funding to move our building, but unfortunately that didn't come to fruition. They couldn't agree to what we thought was a fair market rent, and Coast Guard ultimately didn't want their new building to be separate from their existing building, to even though it's not very far apart, they just didn't want them to be completely separate. So they started looking at, in early 2018, adding on to their existing building. So they approached staff, and we brought this to the City Council, and they started pursuing about 1,800 square foot expansion of their building onto the eastern portion of it where it goes into the parking lot where they currently are now. So a new consent of landowner was issued for that project in 2018 in August, and they started into the planning and permitting process and working with the city. We started going into closed session to start negotiating what a supplemental lease agreement would look like for that. As they began working into the process and really starting to do working drawings and getting the architectures involved, it became clear to them that their funding they had, even though it was, I think, maybe by this time a little bit more than $1.4 million, it wasn't going to build anything more than about 800 square feet in a single story. Their original plan was to go to double stories. So now they're down to 800 square feet in a single story. So with all that history, and again, we've been very supportive of the Coast Guard over the years and their mission. We're pretty reliant on them for their maritime safety issues, and that the Coast Guard is here is a big box that the Corps of Engineers checks in order to enable our dredging every year. So we've been moving forward trying to find a good path for them to come up with some kind of relief in their building, and this seems to be the best thing we can do with the funding available, short of Congress coming up with a real big funding measure, but that doesn't seem to be coming. So two actions that we're looking for council of tonight are two actions that we're looking to from approval from the council to move this project forward are, one, the approval of the necessary permit entitlements through our standard conditional use permit process, CUP process, which is currently underway in Scott's shop. They're going to Planning Commission on April 16th for their combined hearing on concept and precise plan approval, and then tentatively on the May 14th City Council meeting for a conditional use permit approval on that, and then tonight's approval of this resolution and the supplemental lease agreement. Coast Guard is not required to obtain a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission, but via their federal environmental process, NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, they must basically comply with what Coastal will be requiring through the NEPA process. So be a little bit of a different process, but it still go through that public review process for the Coast Guard to get their permissions there. The highlights of the supplemental lease agreement, the SLA. Again, the Coast Guard is authorized to build this 800-square-foot addition, and again, they're doing the CUP process through community development in exchange for taking the five spots that are currently Coast Guard-dedicated parking spaces for this addition. They're paying the $75,000 offset fee. Coast Guard has another lease agreement with the city. It's called the Supplemental Services or Support Services Agreement, Support Services Lease. It expires this September. It's between the city and the Coast Guard to provide their other needs beyond their building. One of them is the Coast Guard is given 10, really undesignated from the standpoint that the lease agreement doesn't say where they're going to be. It just says they'll get 10 dedicated parking spaces. They've historically been right behind the building because that's where they are and that's where they fit. And it's right next to their station. They can keep an eye on them. The support services lease also allows them use of the dock that they've built on the North T Pier and the shed out on the end of the pier. Those are the things that are in that. So that lease is up in September, so we'll begin negotiating on that here pretty soon to figure out where their 10 spaces that they have requested. They have said they do want their 10 spaces back. Obviously, we're displacing five. Our concern is pushing them further south into the business land, where our leaseholders are trying to conduct their business, so that'll be a negotiated point that we'll work with as we move forward. And then again, back for tonight, on the supplemental lease agreement, is the Coast Guard is building a screening enclosure for their dumpster and trash can needs. They're creating a historical sign to show what their history is and maybe what the military history is here in Morro Bay, if there's room for it. And just added, with recent last-minute negotiations with the Coast Guard that you have in your packet that I put up there on your dais, is a new supplemental lease agreement with this section highlighted. They agreed to commit to the maximum degree of gender parity that they can, given their space constraints and what their federal requirements are. For having separate facilities for both sexes. They agreed to the language that, quote, the government and city agree the government will in good faith seek to provide opportunities for gender parity at Coast Guard Station Morro Bay to the maximum extent possible, given the physical and space limitations of their station building. And then the highlights of the conditional use permit are essentially, you know, you'll see them later as they come through Planning Commission and back to Council, but we need to modify the lease lines around, redraw the lease lines around the new addition, and they'll be building an ADA accessible parking space, which is the one space that they're affecting next to our building. So we'll convert the one space that kind of doesn't become a very usable parking space because it's so close to their building as you drive into the driveway, and I'll get a diagram up here shortly, and they'll convert that to ADA. My department is intending sometime over the course of the spring or summer, as our original front door, the county built our building prior to city's incorporation. Our original front door is supposed to be facing the street where the little pergola is and where that door is. For some reason, we always put it on the other side. So I think we're going to plan on moving it around and do some changes internally and get an ADA spot in there, because, as you know, in our current front door, which is on the ocean side, there's a non-ADA accessible step. The door is not ADA wide enough. The door on the street side is, so we're going to try and get a little bit of ADA relief on our building by doing that in conjunction with the Coast Guard building and an ADA spot for us. So, in conclusion, in various forms and steps throughout many years, the Coast Guard has brought this process to the Council in regular and closed session, culminates in this project. We've been working very closely with them. We just had a conference call with them again today. We have a meeting every other week by phone and discuss what the issues are to move both these processes forward. This is only partially going to relieve the Coast Guard space needs. They are committed to providing some limited female billeting at the station. They're seeking additional rental properties to rent to for those folks when they bring them in. But unfortunately, they're still not going to be able to do full gender parity, and the biggest issue with that is because, again, their staffing needs for their boat overnight crews means that two crews need to be overnight, and they just don't have the space for it. But they're going to try and get some female billets back in Station Morro Bay, and maybe someday they'll be able to build a little bit bigger. From a look standpoint, and these is about as big as I can get, but this is basically what's coming to Planning Commission. This is a pretty good rendition of the existing building, and this has no laser on it. So what you have there is that's in the middle is just a real brief drawing of what the new addition will look like coming onto the building. From a plan layout standpoint, the two little drawings that you can't see anything on the left aren't too pertinent, but what's really pertinent is their larger station in the building. You can see their existing U.S. Coast Guard station in that rectangular area with the horizontal or the diagonal hash marks is their proposed new space they're going to be putting in, and you can see our office next to it. And then this, unfortunately, is way too small to see, but basically the bottom drawing, the top section is their new building addition that they're putting on. The left part is labeled as suit drying. The middle and right parts are labeled as berthing, so they plan on putting some additional berthing in there. And again, that's mainly for their two crews that stay overnight. It's nobody is stationed over at the station overnight on a residential basis. This is all just crew-based, depending on what the weather conditions are. And then some artist conceptions of what the new addition looks like, just from a kind of a before and after standpoint, to see that it, you know, unless you're looking from the north side or the south side, you know, looking from the street side, it really doesn't appear to be much of a difference because it's not going above any existing roof height and maintaining the existing sort of building outline. And with that, I'll bring it back to Council for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hendersby. Long time coming, huh? Been a while. I'll open it up for Council questions. Looking to my left, Councilmember Addis. Want to start us off?
Sure.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. I do want to thank staff and especially the harbor director for answering my extensive emails on this, and the city attorney for his support. I'm wondering how long the Coast Guard has been promising to bring on more women.
Until really we've brought it up in this process, they had women stationed here on the cutters. I recall having seen they had some women on the cutters. Couldn't tell you how many over the years. And then when they transitioned over to the search and rescue detachment, and then initially when they had the motor lifeboats, they had women. But because of as they were developing their mission and their operation, because it was new, they tried initially to have women overnighting, but their separation requirements federally, per kind of like ADA, their standards that they have to comply with, they couldn't comply with those standards, so they had to stop billeting women. Short of getting additional space, they've expressed interest in trying to get gender parity back, but because they just didn't have the space, they've never committed to it or promised any date. They've been, like I said, we've been working for a good 15, maybe 20 years on various iterations of building a new station in Morro Bay. We even looked at maybe moving their station over to the Morro Bay Oyster Company lease site and then building a joint Coast Guard harbor station, which would have probably enabled that in addition to enabling us getting their much needed space. But again, for various reasons, it just they never came to fruition. But we've been trying.
So they've been promising for 20 years to bring on women, but nothing's happened?
I don't know that promising. They had women up until probably, I'm going to say 10 years ago, and that's from memory, but approximately maybe 10 years ago, and then they just had to get away from it. Again, it comes down to, and we've worked with our congresspeople and our senators to try and get federal funding for them to build a new, bigger station, but the federal funding hasn't come. So until they can get larger, they physically cannot do it. So,
do you know why over the last decade they haven't rented space, given that they get $1 a year rent?
No, I do not.
No. Okay. And then I know you believe their promises, but I'm wondering what they've done over the past decade to make you believe that they'll follow through with this.
Well, we've got it in the supplemental lease agreement. It's going to be somewhat subjective what maximum efforts are. Other than their commitment to it, I don't know what sort of gender parity standards are within the Coast Guard's own operating parameters or staffing parameters, what they have to comply with if they've got some sort of standards they need to meet. That we could potentially, not that we can hold them to it because they're federal standards and we couldn't do that, but that may be something that we could look into.
And then when they expand their space, what are the opportunities for women?
I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know that they fully developed that. They're still working through it. They're just, with their funding potentially going away, if they don't get a project going, they're continuing to move forward and develop that as they go. And again, and to answer your question, what do I believe? I believe they are committed to billeting as many women and as many roles as they can. But I think that starts still under development. I believe they will. To what degree, I think they probably don't even completely know yet because they're still under development.
You mentioned the limited billeting. I think you mentioned that. Maybe it was in an email.
And I think it's limited in that to be a operational boat, on the boat, rescue, enforcement, driving the motorboat, motor lifeboats, or being crew on the motor lifeboats, they need to be overnight capable, and they can't do that with their existing station. They may, and we can inquire, they may have some other roles that they can play on the boats that aren't necessarily overnight required, potentially, but that's up to the Coast Guard. I'd have to ask them and see if that's possible for them.
That's all my questions. I have comments, but not any more questions.
We'll get
Thank
there.
You.
Councilmember Davis.
I have
no questions. Councilmember Heller.
No questions.
And I have no questions. With that, I'll open it up for public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak on item C1, feel free to come forward now. Welcome, Bob.
My name is Bob. First of all, Mayor, Council Members, Staff, and Morro Bay citizens. I support and recommend City Council adopt Resolution Number 22-19, included with a staff report as Attachment 1, approving a supplemental lease agreement to the Coast Guard's Station Morro Bay building lease to enable the Coast Guard to expand their building. We need the Coast Guard here, and we want the Coast Guard to stay. So I solely really support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Public comment is still open. Item C1. Seeing no movement forward, I'll close public comment, bring it back to council for discussion. Councilmember Addis, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Well, I do want to thank the Coast Guard for everything they do to serve our community and express that I do think it's important for them to be here, and I do think it's important for them to expand their space. I have huge concerns, though, about the city giving a facility for $1 a year to an agency that staffs only men and that for the last decade has said that they simply don't have space for both genders. And I think we need to really think critically about what we can do as an agency to leverage any bargaining power that we have. And I was grateful to see it in the supplemental lease agreement. I think the resolution language could be a little bit stronger and could mention specifically that the staffing there is 100% men, and that part of the reason that we want this expansion has to do with the desire to have women at the Coast Guard station. I think especially because we're a public agency, and there happens to be a little bit of precedence in this recently with the State Lands Commission, who said that they were not going to permit the Mavericks surf competition unless Mavericks added both an event for women and equal prize money for women. And so across our state, we're seeing things start to change a little bit, where the tone is such that we're saying it's really not okay to staff only one gender. So I think if we're going to move forward with this, I would just ask for some changes to the resolution language. And I have those changes when it's time to share them.
It would be time to share them.
Okay. So where it says...
Not in a motion, but just in discussion.
Sure. Do you want me to say them right now?
Not as a motion, but just in discussion, just if you would. Yes, I'd like to hear it.
So where it says, whereas the United States Coast Guard has stationed...
You want to just, for the public's help, what page are you on?
I don't know what page it is.
Agenda
I just
page.
Pulled the resolution.
It's 103.
103 of the new packet.
Thank you.
Okay. So where it says, whereas the United States Coast Guard has stationed personnel, that's the third paragraph down, mm-hmm. I would modify that to say 100% male personnel. And in the next paragraph, where it says, and equipment storage needs, comma, and the Coast Guard, I would insert there, and due to the fact that the United States Coast Guard Station in Morro Bay does not currently staff women or allow for women, either one of those.
I'm sorry, and give me that insert point again. I was trying to... I'm
already oh, yeah, sorry. Okay, so
third
the
paragraph, are we still in third
one,
paragraph?
One, two, three, the fourth,
fourth
whereas,
paragraph. Okay.
I would add in,
at
and
the, okay,
due
the
to
end.
The fact... Uh-huh. That the United States Coast Guard Station in Morro Bay does not currently allow for women.
Slow down just a little bit. Due to the fact that the...
United States Coast uh-huh. Guard Station uh-huh. in Morro Bay uh-huh. does not currently allow for women.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And that's it on that one. And then down to the last whereas.
Okay.
It says, to better accommodate those in the Coast Guard... I would add in, as well as hire women for the United States Coast Guard Station in Morro Bay.
And I'm sorry, one more time on that mm-hmm. one. You're on the last whereas?
Yep.
Okay, and you want this at the end?
So it says, whereas the City of Morro Bay is supportive of the United States Coast Guard and desiring it and desirous of assisting the Coast Guard to better accommodate those in the Coast Guard.
Got it.
Then I would add, mm-hmm. as well as hire women for the United States Coast Guard Station in Morro Bay. Because I'm under the impression that really unless we have this expansion, we cannot add more women. Is that correct? Without the expansion,
Are we questioning, going back to questions? Or?
Sorry. I have one more. Yes,
okay,
that's
go ahead. Go ahead.
The expansion is going to allow, my understanding, the expansion is going to allow some women billeting in Morro Bay. It's not going to provide for the full billeting being ready boat crews and whatnot until they get even bigger.
But so part of the purpose of the expansion is to add women?
Yes.
And so that's why I'm suggesting these changes to the resolution to clarify that part of the purpose of this expansion and part of the reason we would move forward with this expansion is because we want to add women.
Right, and that was part of the closed session discussion as well, so I know that's why that's coming forward now. I just wanted to add that. Okay, I do believe I have that. Any other comments?
No.
Okay, great. I'll move on. Any discussion? Councilmember Davis.
I appreciate Councilmember Addis bringing this issue forward for discussion. I hesitate to tie a building expansion permit to a social issue, but the language that I have seen, first, the language in the supplemental lease agreement, which I understand the Coast Guard has already agreed to, and the proposed language that Councilmember Addis proposes for the resolution, are not, they do not require specific performance, but they do express the city's concern and desire for gender equity. So I can support that language in this case.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Heller.
So I, too, appreciate the comments that you brought forth, Councilmember Addis. I think the staff report is very clear about the purpose and objective of adding the 806 feet so that women members can be hired and staffed there. I don't think it's appropriate to modify the resolution. I like the way it's currently written. I do think it's a public policy issue that's getting mixed in with what should be a pretty straightforward decision by the council. So I would be against changing the language in the resolution.
Any comments? Now, I just from a staff perspective, I have a lease sitting at my place here that's different than was in the agenda packet. Could somebody comment on that? And
yeah, sorry if that wasn't clear. That is the new language the Coast Guard just agreed to, so that is that sentence inserted into the one that's already in the agenda packet. That's just an updated version of that.
And how did that get added? I'm just curious. That
I just brought it to you tonight.
Oh, okay.
It's brand new.
Okay.
Hot off the press.
Okay. So we're really looking at the supplemental lease agreement that is at our place with mine is yellowed.
Yeah,
that's
I highlighted
the additional
this
language. I just want to be clear
and
on
added,
what we're approving.
Yeah, and I added some in the. Sorry about that. It wasn't clear about that, but yes, and I added some on the back table there. For some of the public.
And it was mainly for clarification that I asked a question, not to embarrass you.
Yep,
that's not my intent.
I don't embarrass that easy.
Okay, so I'll. Make some comments here. We have a wonderful service in the U.S. Coast Guard that has provided much safety for a large portion of our coastline right here in Morro Bay, and I feel we're very fortunate to have them. The issue now that's before them is they have tried on numerous occasions to fund a larger building but now are limited to the funding that they have and will lose that very quickly if they're not able to move forward on this site plan, which we've reviewed on a number of occasions. I appreciate the comments regarding gender parity that was discussed by this council, the language that Council Member Addis is requesting on the resolution, I don't believe, Mr. City Attorney, you can correct me if I'm incorrect, actually demands that they do anything, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but it doesn't bind them to doing anything. It adds language that would hopefully prompt them to move towards gender parity. Am I correct in my assumption?
That is correct, for the reason that the resolution is signed by the city and it's not signed by the Coast Guard.
Great. And then also the additional language on the supplemental lease, Mr. Endersby, you say has been agreed to by the Coast Guard, and I'll read that for the public's notice. Government and city agree government will in good faith seek to provide opportunities for gender parity at Coast Guard Station Morro Bay to the maximum extent possible given the physical and space limitations of the station building.
Yes, Coast Guard has agreed to that.
Good. Then I too would support the revised resolution 2219 with the language that Councilmember Addis has added. I also am in support of the supplemental lease. I think it's important to move this forward this evening in order for the Coast Guard to get funded to move this initiative forward and to continue to provide services here. So with that, those are my comments. I'll entertain a motion and look to Councilmember Addis possibly for that. And be very specific, please.
I'm not sure if I know how.
Okay, I'll help you.
So I'll move to approve the amended resolution 2219 and the supplemental lease agreement with the new changes.
And Madam Clerk, would you like that read back, the changes? Or
I'm okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is that the extent?
Sounds good.
The resolution and the lease agreement, mm-hmm. That's it?
Okay. Second. Okay, it's been moved by Councilmember Addis to approve resolution 2219 with amended language as stated and also approve the supplemental lease agreement. Any further discussion? If not, and seconded by Councilmember Davis, I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
No.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 3-1-1.
Thank you. And that moves us to item C2, discussion of revising the general fund allocation amount provided to the Tourism Business Improvement District. This is a discussion-only agenda item. No action tonight required, just FYI. And I'll turn to our esteemed presenter, which would be our city manager. I'm looking at your first slide. It's very interesting.
Leave it to your interpretation.
Yeah. Do we need to get some help from our folks in the back? AGP? Thank you.
Probably broken. Yes. All right. Perfect. Thank you. Good evening, Council, Mayor, Scott Collins, City Manager. Jennifer Little, our Tourism Manager, is also here to answer questions, should you have them, about some of the specifics that I'll be presenting. Try to keep this short. So the agenda before you is to cover some background on the T-bid, as we have a few new council members who have been briefed on this, but it's always important to provide that background, discuss how the general fund allocation to tourism has been done in the past, how it's been used, talk briefly about our upcoming fiscal year 2019-20 budget, discuss options for the general fund allocation to tourism, and recommendation. And as the mayor stated, this is just a discussion to really get input from council before going back to the TBID advisory board for input. So the TBID, the city took over Management of Tourism Promotion and Marketing in 2016. And resolution number 316 was sort of the guiding document, if you will, for the origin of the city taking over management of that function. There's a lot of important details in the resolution which were attached to the staff report, but the pertinent point here tonight is that the city committed in that resolution $60,000 annually to tourism efforts, plus 20% over $3 million earned in transit occupancy tax, or TOT, would be driven to tourism as a general fund support. The total budget for this current year for tourism is about $1.06 million. The next page is just more detail on the budget. We don't need to go into that, but just want to make sure that background was available if there were any questions we needed to point back to it. The general fund allocation, again, this is what the city general fund provides to tourism. Again, we began in fiscal year 16-17. The city provided $60,000 as the base amount for the first year. That increased to $125,000 in fiscal year 17-18. And this current year, we're estimating about $146,000 from the general fund to tourism. In addition, the tourism contributes a 2% fee plus some IT charges back to the general fund. That number has increased over the last 3 years, estimating about $20,000 this year. And when you wrap that together with some of the overhead expenses that aren't really included in that 2% fee, the city is also subsidizing overhead expenses to the tune of about $50,000 on a conservative level. It's probably more than that. As we're going through our cost allocation plan, we think that number is closer to $100,000, but we don't have those numbers in front of us, so we're just using an estimate on the conservative end. The use of general fund allocation for tourism. In fiscal year 18-19, the current year that we're in, tourism has used the general fund allocation of $146,000 in the following ways, though these are summary numbers. About $80,000 to special events. That includes either marketing their events, some fees that they have to pay to the city or other agencies, some logistical support, and other ways of supporting those events. It helps over 20 special events in Morro Bay. So on average, they're receiving approximately $3,500 for their event. $20,000 goes to special projects this year, including the downtown tree lighting program, which is almost wrapped up, roundabout improvements, as well as helping offset design fees for the Franklin Riley Park that's currently undeveloped. Approximately $20,000 in change for visiting journalists. The intention here is to entice journalists from major publications to come to Morro Bay, spend an evening or weekend here. We cover the cost for boarding and food, and they write good stories about Morro Bay for their readers. And there's approximately another $20,000 that support our ongoing marketing efforts for the city. So kind of a pivot point in the presentation, looking forward into our fiscal year 19-20 budget. I'm talking with the finance director a couple of weeks ago. She's put numbers together, projects us at about a $325,000 deficit. That's a structural deficit, meaning that would be ongoing and probably added to in the future, largely because of our rising pension costs. And conceiving some strategies to address this deficit that will be ongoing and growing in future years, our recommendation is largely to support the existing service levels that we provide to our residents, knowing that any cut in staffing would lead to a corresponding cut in service levels. We are lean and mean. So we considered a reduction in economic development funding, and that's not always a great thing either, because that's an investment in your community. So there's no great answer. There's no easy solution here, obviously, but this was one that we considered. We currently fund economic development to help address those issues anywhere from about $100,000 to $150,000 per year. Most recently, supporting wayfinding, the MB4 program with the chamber, really business support and outreach functions, growing our workforce, et cetera. And then some of the other priorities that have been identified through the goal setting process, such as Highway 1 signage, high-speed internet, ombudsman, and other considerations that have been discussed at the March 1st hearing, as well as online through the POLCO app. So these things will be coming back to council through the next iteration of the goal setting on April 18th. So as far as the general fund allocation to tourism, this has been a point of discussion for city council in the past. Just last year during the budget process, council had considered modifying the general fund allocation amounts, but felt it was important to defer that discussion until there was significant or some outreach to stakeholders who benefit from the general fund allocation, or those who kind of are party to it, are decision makers in that area, or maybe benefactors are impacted by a change. And so really what we're bringing here is the first discussion to get input from council before going back out to TBID and hoteliers to get their input. A reduction or elimination of general fund allocation has an impact on that industry, but that could also help support general economic development activities if we were to use it for that purpose. I apologize for the small font here. It is on the slides there's handouts in the back, and council has these. But we considered about four different options, and there's a myriad of ways that this can be looked at, but these are some of the general options available for council consideration. The first is to eliminate the general fund allocation completely. This would net the city general fund approximately $150,000 next fiscal year. It would eliminate all funding for grants to special events that tourism currently funds and other marketing efforts that I identified. Option B would be to eliminate the general fund allocation for just 1 year and kind of create a moratorium to see, how we handle next year's budget, if there are new enhancements to revenues, the cannabis, et cetera, that help us balance out that maybe this is just a one-year measure. Again, the same impacts would be felt as option A for next budget year. Option C would be to reduce the general fund allocation to that base amount of $60,000. This would net the general fund about $90,000 next year, and those funds could help support economic development initiatives, just not as much as option A, of course. And then TBID would still have money to allocate to special events or other marketing efforts next year. Option D would be to maintain the status quo, providing TBID the full allotment, which would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $150,000 or more. And it would create challenges for us to pursue economic development initiatives, or other cuts would have to be considered through the budget process. So this sort of gives you more of a high-level review of the options. Option A, again, general fund allocation would be zeroed out. They'd lose $150,000. That would come back to the general fund. Same with option B. Option C would sort of split the difference, $60,000 to the TBID. General fund would net $90,000. Option D, general fund would give $150,000, and TBID would have that, and there wouldn't be anything left for the general fund to kind of address some of those issues. So the recommendation here tonight is really just to discuss the options and, of course, consider other variations of those. And staff would, if council is so inclined, would take this discussion to TBID at their next meeting, the advisory board meeting in April, to get their input and provide recommendations to city council. And council would review this through the May and June budget hearings. So Jen and I are happy to answer any questions that council may have. I know that's a lot to be thrown at you, and we have received public comment, correspondence through emails and a few folks who spoke tonight. And I think it's important to recognize there is benefits to the community for special events. There is economic benefit for sure. It's hard to exactly measure that amount, but it is part of our overall strategy for tourism, so we don't want to downplay that, and certainly there are charities and nonprofits involved in those discussions, which is never easy. So we want to recognize the value of those events, but bring this discussion forward for input. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Scott, thank you for that presentation. I'll open it up for questions. Council Member Heller, start with you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the staff report. I appreciate it. I'm going to ask for some more numbers, which you may or may not be prepared to give me. But you mentioned the $325,000 general fund structural deficit for 1920. Can you tell me roughly what it's going to be 5 years from now? Or I know you have projections. I just don't have the numbers in front of me.
Yes, I defer to the finance director, but I imagine it's about, is it about $1 million by then, by year five?
I'll pull up the forecast, but I believe it is close to $1 million in the next 5 years.
Okay. And you mentioned limited number of options without disrupting services. What are some of the other options that we can, off the top of your head?
Some of them include not fulfilling some of our, not obligations, but some of the commitments to funding, capital, minor capital, vehicle replacements, risk management funds. Those are just kind of investments in our future and or addressing future liabilities. So there's some play there. Certainly you could look at things that would have impact on services. That's the other side. But those are the ones that we could remain intact on the operations side. But then those deficits grow accordingly.
Sure. Okay. Now, I'm not clear, has the TBID advisory board weighed in on this? Or
no, and that's why we wanted to direct the discussion back to them, but felt it was important with two new council members on board to get your perspective before going back to them. Since this was brought up again during the budget discussion last year, and this is the first opportunity we really had to put it together.
And has the council decided to not look at services?
No. That decision has not been made. But this is just one discussion point. Of course, we can look at that.
That's all the questions I have for right now.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Councilmember Davis.
Thank you. The tourism budget on that was slide four. It bothers me under expenditures where we see a line item for salaries and benefits, 195, supplies, 55, services, $819,000. When you come back with your more specific proposal after going to TBID, can we have a more definitive breakout of that?
Yes, absolutely. I was just looking for an easy comparison to previous years just for this discussion, but when it comes back to council, it'll be laid out with the various line items.
Okay. Yeah. And then I think the same thing on the next slide, the city subsidy to tourism for overhead. I don't have a clear understanding of what that involves. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, just like wastewater and water fund. I think that's the other one. City attorney, city manager, risk, HR, IT. It's all the overhead expenses,
okay.
Right? And the harbor is the same thing. This is part of the fee study, cost allocation, to ensure that we're right sized in what we charge those enterprise funds. But that is not how TBID has been addressed. It was just a 2% fee was what was agreed upon. And
right.
That does not come anywhere close to covering the overhead expenses.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the next TBID meeting is the 18th of this month. But the discussion we have tonight will not be going to the advisory committee until the following month. In April, will there be any opportunity at the next meeting for the committee to preview this? Or
yes, at the April 18th meeting, it's the annual stakeholder meeting in the morning, like to start at 8:30 on the 18th.
Oh, this is April.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is going to be at the next TBID meeting.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, that's brilliant. Wow. Thank you, Scott.
All right.
Okay, that's all.
Sorry, folks.
That's all right.
Glad you're back. Glad you're back. No further questions then, I take it. You're done. Okay, great. Thanks. And again, Scott, thank you for the presentation. I appreciate it. Community events portion, could you just, again, it's about $3,500 per event that this allocation helps fund in the community. Is that correct? And that's about 20 different events?
Correct.
Across the board?
Correct.
Is that just an average, or are some much higher than others?
Some are about 1,000, some are 5, but they're typically not more than 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
The visiting journalists, could we just get a little more clarity on what that is? Are those the bloggers that come in and maybe write about Morro Bay?
Yeah, and Jen Little can fill in more, but for instance, we had a gentleman who visited with Newsweek last year and read a tremendous article about the Highway 1 because it was the reopening, and he spent an evening, a whole day and an evening here, and then went on to other parts of SLO to talk about the whole county. And, it was really delightful that he was able to spend time and get to know kind of the community, some of the restaurants that he, you know, could put a pitch in for. And so really this is just to get a little more of an insider story about Morro Bay. So we do our best to try to lure them in, but there is an expense to that. So Jen can kind of talk about some of the more examples.
Sure. Good evening.
Jen, welcome.
Hi, Mayor, Council. So what we do is we bring in journalists. We're very selective of who we bring in. We always want them here 2 nights because we're promoting to visiting guests stay 2 nights a minimum. So that's one of our requirements. So we always want to cover their hotel, which are fairly expensive. We try to keep them down on the water or close to the Embarcadero, so we have the cost of that, and then we have their days all about Morro Bay. So we pay for their activities, we'll send them out paddleboarding or kayaking, all different events, and then we'll take them out to dinner and to lunches, and we'll supply all that as well. So we really manage their time here, where we want them to go, and really what we want them to promote and write about. And we've been in Town and Country Magazine, Sunset Magazine, I mean, huge publications this last year. And with Visit California bringing Dream Drive here to reopen Highway 1, we had 85 visiting journalists internationally. And we housed 20 of them after that event. And that did not cost us anything. But after that, SoCal kept them in town, and we did pay for some of that expense. And one of the things we got out of that is Visit California, their annual guide that comes out statewide. We have a 2-page spread of that visual. It's an air shot of the rock and the harbor. It's absolutely beautiful, about a story of Morro Bay. It's on like page 50. So that's really huge press for us.
Good.
Yeah.
And I was at an event last evening, and were those regarding Amgen, would that be an example of a couple people that came in that are going to probably be writing about the event?
Yes, that's a great example. So those are two, we call them influencers, and they have big online following on Instagram, and they were actually brought in from Visit California. So Visit California actively goes after people that won't even look at us as a city. You know, we're kind of small, but when Visit California says these are important people, they'll, you know, tap into us. So they're following the entire Amgen tour up and down the state, and they're going to every city. And we hosted them for 2 nights at 456 Embarcadero Inn. Last night they went to the galley for dinner, and yeah, they did a ride with a local slow bike team through Morro Bay. It was really nice.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Okay. You can stand up,
but
that's
okay.
I'm going to go back with Scott. That's fine. During Mr. Roboto's presentation on your strategic marketing plan, destination marketing plan, he and the council approved a goal that was established of moving the spend from $160 million to $200 million over a 5-year period. And I basically did some calculations to see what that might translate to based upon his numbers with regard to TOT. And as I compare those to our TOT projections in the future, the gains made from the proposed plan would appear to be much greater than we're budgeting for with regard to TOT. And my question is, there's a question in here somewhere. Knowing that TOT revenues hotel revenues and TOT revenues translate into more marketing revenues as they increase, I'm wondering if we're under budgeting TOT and possibly we're going to see greater gains and there might be more marketing dollars available to the TBID with regard to the study that was done and then the goals that we've established for the spend. I know it's a long question, but...
Yeah. Ultimately, yeah, we hope so. But we have to look at kind of where we are today. I think he provided a roadmap. The strategic plan provides a roadmap to see some of that increase, and I think one of the aspects that wasn't highlighted well enough, I think, during that discussion about the $160 to $200 million jump was that was also relying upon the industry itself doing things. It has nothing to do with the city. So, for instance, getting a new hotel, we haven't had a new one in 20 years. A 100-room hotel or 80-room hotel will make huge jumps, as you know. So some of that has nothing to do with us. However, there is some level of, you know, call and response. If we're doing a better job promoting, it may encourage some of that redevelopment, if you will. As far as, you know, how we're budgeting in TOT, I think last year we were pretty conservative, the current year we're in, but budgeting for this current year we were conservative. I think, by and large, we're sort of hitting that mark. Some of that might be just because of the level of competition just keeps jumping year after year, and maybe reaching peak tourism, if you will. That's sort of being discussed in the industry right now. So we're trying to do ways to continue to push beyond those barriers. So I think we have to be conservative in our estimates because we rely upon those estimates to drive what our budget is. And if we don't hit the mark, we have to make mid-year corrections. That's certainly not a place we want to be. So we're really pushing hard to see those numbers increase. But, you know, it's sort of a tension that isn't easy to solve, right? We have aspirations, but we also have the realities.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you, Scott. Thank you. You, on your page, I guess it's slide 8, page 4, speak to the elimination of this portion of or all of this allocation could help support economic development efforts. Could you elaborate on what you see are the future needs for economic development? Specifically, we know we have a revenue problem, and economic development is a big piece of that. So I'm wondering if you could just elaborate on on that.
I think there's different layers of economic development. There are the huge opportunities that were like the Market Street Plaza, potentially a hotel by the high school, the power plant, the wastewater treatment plant, in the future offshore wind energy. Those are huge projects and major undertakings in and of themselves. Requires significant participation at the council level and city manager and director level. And then there's some of the more, I wouldn't say the mundane, but the smaller items, like Highway 1 signage. Important, but potentially could find ways of making inroads that doesn't require that level of effort or, you know, city manager level, but levels below. High-speed internet has certainly been in discussion. Again, doesn't necessarily require a director level of running a project, but certainly requires some oversight and some participation by staff. And that sort of gets back to the discussion that was raised through the Economic Development Strategic Plan of one of the key recommendations was an ombudsman at the city, someone who's directly responsible for those interactions, the smaller things, the things that drive businesses nuts about permitting potentially or just how we market ourselves or what we're doing to help support them. Those connections we aren't able to necessarily establish because we're focused on those huge, huge items, appropriately so, but we don't have necessarily staff to drive some of those other initiatives. And that isn't something we've solved, and I know that's been a discussion point, at least since I've been here, about how do we rectify that. So that's another issue that can maybe address some of those smaller things, little things add up to something big.
Good.
Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah, I happen to think it's extremely important, but wanted to get some elaboration on the kinds of initiatives that you thought were important to concentrate on in the future. My last question has to do with possibility of increased revenues coming into the T-bid for marketing from vacation rentals. We know that the T-bid was unable to give a recommendation some time ago, so my question is, there could be significant offsetting revenues that could compensate for any reductions in general fund allocation. When is that conversation going to happen, and when can we expect a recommendation?
Yes, good, great. Jen took the initiative the last TBID meeting to discuss with the new board. I think we had three or four new members since that failed attempt at vacation rental recommendation, and understandably so, there were a lot of conflicts, individual conflicts, about, you know, some vacation rental owners were on the board itself. It just made it challenging to have a really fruitful conversation. Nothing personal against those individuals, but now we have a new board, a new opportunity. So we had a discussion with them at the March meeting, and they recommended moving forward with a kind of an outreach strategy that included a facilitator, not city staff, so we can be removed from that and have a facilitator who doesn't have a stake in the game, but understands the game and nonetheless work with vacation rental owners to understand kind of their level of comfort, what their concerns are about coming in, because currently they pay nothing but benefit significantly from TBID. And they some of the folks actually came to the meeting and acknowledged that. They're getting something for free here, and they understand the fairness issue. They also understand that the council will be looking at the global vacation rental policy sometime this year, and that's also something to keep in mind, and finding balance with all those things. So we want to make sure we do a robust process of outreach, engagement with those folks, engagement with hoteliers. We can probably foresee a recommendation coming to council in the summer or early fall. This question did come up with another council member offline just about, well, when can we get a recommendation? Good question. Probably not in time for the reassessment for TBID, but we discussed with the city attorney that we can do a mid-year potentially. So in other words, if you decide in September that you feel it's important to incorporate vacation rentals into this TBID, we could do a mid-year assessment where they would be brought in. There's a lot of moving pieces to make that happen, but we see an avenue to make that happen. So even if there was a half of the year add, that could, if they go up to the full 3%, that could net the city potentially $75,000 on a half year, upwards of $150,000 on a full year. So it gives you an idea of maybe some of the offsetting revenue potential.
And then if you added RVs, would it also only increase that dramatically?
It would not significantly. They're more of a minor add compared to the rec rate. I'm getting ahead now. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's half as much.
Okay.
I'm looking at the data.
Okay.
Here,
so you have the data.
Sorry, I didn't
yes.
mean to answer my
yeah,
question, but
that's okay. You caught me there.
Just wanted to vet it for the public. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's half again as much. So.
Yeah. Correct.
Which would be significant.
Yes.
Okay. Appreciate that very much. That's all the questions I had. With that, I'll open it up for.
I have
point
question.
Of order.
I'm sorry.
Council
did I miss you? Oh,
Councilmember Addison.
How could I forget you, Dawn? I apologize. I went to Councilmember Davis, went to myself, and forgot you. That's Councilmember Addison, please.
let's see.
Yeah.
On slide six, where the $20,000 for visiting journalists. It doesn't matter what side, but on know the $20,000. If council were to recommend cutting this $100,000, does that mean then that $20,000 for visiting journalists would be lost from TBID? Or
it would be. I mean, you could make whatever recommendation you want. Ultimately, council decides on the tourism budget. So if the decision was to ratchet down to the base level of $60,000, you could appropriate that as you feel is appropriate. Typically, the way this works is in a normal year, after the budget's approved by council, then we go back to TBID and they initiate the grant process, knowing how much money they have to spend. So if there was no grant process, then that's it. And you could spend that $60,000 on whatever you like. Yeah.
On slide seven, these are things, wayfinding, 4MB, Highway 1 signage, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Those are items that would be cut
based on the deficit, unless we backfilled with this $100,000, then we could use the $100,000 for these items?
You could do that, or you could, you know, as Councilmember Heller, you know, it is an important point. I mean, that no decision has been made on maintaining city services as they currently exist. But in a world where they exist as they are, yes, that would be, those would be some of the things that would be on the chopping block. The MB4 program, just so everyone knows, is a one-year program that hasn't been baked into the budget that we're looking at. So that is a $30,000 contract. So that was just a pilot, and council's going to get a report before the budget on those efforts.
For option B, as a one-year moratorium, is there a scenario where the money is taken back, but it doesn't end up being for 1 year? Like, at the first quarter, we have way more money than we thought, and we give some back, or it's just a one-year or
time frame? These are sort of your standard options, but you could conceivably consider that if revenues somehow blow through the expectations, great. You know, we would be a mid-year adjustment. The thing to keep in mind, though, as it relates to marketing efforts, is something that our staff thinks 3 or 4 or 6 months ahead of time, right?
Same thing with events.
So same thing with events.
Let's say you have a lot of events,
so
September, October, November.
It's important to know in the beginning of the year what they have to plan. Yeah.
And then with TOT, thinking about increasing, is there anything being done to brace for more Highway 1 closures? I mean, I know we are optimistic that TOT will continue to increase, but with climate change and the number of times Highway 1 has closed just this season, we don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that kind of hit us.
It did.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's something we all fear for sure. Just like climate change impacts generally, we do our best to prepare for them. We thankfully have a significant partner with Visit SoCal, who was very instrumental in getting Sacramento to move that project along at 3 or 4 times the rate that they've ever seen done before. So, you know, we do have that in our corner. You know, the international market is growing leaps and bounds. India is significantly growing in terms of its appetite for foreign travel, and China's, we're expecting a 5-fold increase in travel to California. So that means they start out in LA, but eventually folks second or third time back are going to want to migrate up the coast, and then we're going to be a destination for a lot of Chinese travelers and potentially Indian travelers. So, but Highway 1 is key to that. I mean, that's a thing that people want to check off. So, yeah.
It's a bucket list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's all my questions.
Again, my apologies for forgetting that I hadn't asked you yet. That concludes questions. I'll open it up for public comment on this agenda item C2. Any members of the public wanting to come forward, please do so now. Looking deeply into the audience, seeing none come forward, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. I think I'll start with just comments. Again, not looking for any specific recommendation tonight. This is not an action item, and more high-level guidance for things to look at, I guess, is my best way to summarize what I believe staff is looking for. I will say historically that this was agendized over a year and a half ago and looked at initially because of budget deficits that were occurring previously and the concern that general fund dollars potentially needed to be looked at in many different areas in terms of expenses. This happened to be one of them. Council at that time did not make a decision to make a change, but to bring it back again for a further look, and that's how it's gotten here. My general comments would be this. First, my sense is there has been a significant revenue opportunity lost in the fact that a vacation rental and or RV decision has not been made for months. And I'm not pointing fingers at TBID or council or staff, but I'll just state generally that I believe we need to be more nimble and quick in terms of taking advantage of revenue opportunities, because we're facing significant issues, as we all know, with regard to CalPERS and the unfunded liability amount that has led to, at least initially this year, a $325,000 potential deficit, structural deficit that would continue on into the future. That assumption also is made upon a discount rate that CalPERS right now has at 7.15%, when most everybody in the industry believes that's overinflated, which means that the structural deficit for us is probably even greater from a budgetary standpoint because of the fact that CalPERS is overestimating its investment income, which means that our unfunded liability is probably higher than we now assume it to be. But we cannot make those changes in our budget until such time as CalPERS board comes forward and makes those changes. That, to me, is a game changer for Morro Bay. It's huge, and it demands us to look not only at the expense side, but also the revenue side, which we'll have further conversation about in the future. Given that, with regard to this specific issue, my general feelings are it's important to continue to have some support for the community events that occur. There are a number of festivals and other events that are important to the community and to tourism in general, and I'd like for TBID to consider that and what that contribution might be that would continue to be meaningful for the community. Second, I believe that not only do we have an expense problem with regard to the CalPERS issue, but we have a huge revenue problem. We really need a large incremental increase in revenues. That's not going to come quickly to this community in order to really survive in the future and not continuously face potential deficits like this. And so given that, I believe that investment and economic development is critical at this juncture for the community, not only at the broader level of some of the big projects like looking at repurposing Dynegy property, potential wind farm. These are projects that are years out and will not come to fruition in any short order or short period of time. But I do believe there are some catalyst site opportunities and some opportunities to move on the number of items that our city manager outlined for economic development that are extremely important that could add revenues to the community in the short term. And I would like TBID to consider a reduction in the general fund allocation to some degree, specifically with the intent of moving that to economic development and also helping to offset some of the structural deficit that we've looked like. I personally don't think we can continue at the existing level. CalPERS is a game changer. 3 years ago or 4 years ago when we looked at this, it was a very different environment. Some promises may have been made, but we always know those promises are based upon the realities of our current environment. And right now, it has changed dramatically, and there are many different areas that we have to look at, including this, from the expense standpoint, to make this happen. I also would like the TBIT to consider very quickly looking at RV and VR assessment. That could add, at the 2% level for both of those coming in, $132,000 a year to their marketing budget. And for a 3% assessment, could add $194,000 per year, which totally offsets the dollars that we're talking about. And so from my standpoint, I think it's time for a reduction. However, I think it's really, in my consideration, a reinvestment in other revenue-producing opportunities that could be very helpful and that the marketing funds could be offset from TBID by VRRV assessments. And I'll stop there and ask my other council members to weigh in, starting with Councilmember Heller, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think it's important that we all recognize that we have a fiscal emergency in this city. And I think that looking at TBID by itself is not maybe the best approach. I think we need to look at services. I think we need to look at increasing revenues, as the mayor mentioned. I think we have to be realistic about CalPERS. I agree with the mayor on that. I don't think we should spend too much time planning and hoping that the wind energy and Dynegy things will happen, because, as the mayor mentioned, they are in the distant future. I don't think we can depend financially on either of those, nor should we plan for those happening, although we should continue to pursue them. I'm not quite sure why TBID is kind of on the chopping block tonight. Obviously, it's kind of low-hanging fruit in some respects. But I think without reviewing the city's entire financial position and creating a menu of options that the residents can choose from, some combination of reduction of services, perhaps some modifications in the TBID budget, all of these things should be looked at as a whole as opposed to looking at individual lines. I think that these kinds of things will come out through the goal setting and budgeting process that's ahead of us. I think with this item here, I don't really want to make a choice on those options. I would like to send it to the TBID Advisory Board and see what suggestions they might have. I think the main thing is to say, look, we have a structural problem. We need to deal with it. What can TBID do to help? And we really need to boost revenues. There are lots of ideas that have been kicked around for many years that have not been implemented. And I don't know if it's our self-esteem problem here at the city, but I think we can make a lot more and generate a lot more revenue fairly quickly. And it's something we really need to address. And frankly, as much as we don't like to look at services, we have to look at services. We cannot look at this structural deficit without looking at services. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Councilmember Addis, not going to forget you this time.
Well, I appreciate staff bringing this forward, and I don't view this at all as TBID being on the chopping block. I see it quite differently. I think there's a lot of things that we can do with that money, some of which TBID could control, some of which the city could control, and I think if we work in partnership around how those funds are allocated, then we can accomplish goals that will help both the hoteliers and economic development overall. So I would encourage this to move forward to the TBID. I like the idea of providing a couple of options for them to talk about. I think that's important, especially since all of the options are obviously on the table in public right now. I don't see a point in necessarily limiting that conversation at the moment. I definitely would support the getting a VR decision going. I think there could be some revenue to be gained there. I think we absolutely have to keep focus on revenue, and I see economic development as a major way to do that, especially with the suggestions that we have here in terms of using the money towards wayfinding, 4MB, high-speed internet. I'm sure we can't do all of that with $100,000, but I do think any number of those items would support the goals of the TBID as well as the goals of economic development for the city. I do want to give a shout out to the money for visiting journalists. I think that's really important, especially from the point of view of how people share things on social media. I think people tend to share articles that they've read. They tend to share things, obviously, from influencers, and they tend to share less just advertisements. So when I see this piece about marketing efforts, it's important, but I wouldn't want to give up bringing journalists here, because they really do that kind of stuff really spreads the word easily. So I hope folks listening, when they see these articles on Facebook and on Instagram and want to see economic development in Morro Bay, that they share those kinds of things. So I guess overall, I'm supportive of bringing this forward. I do want to make a comment, though, about PERS. A lot of times when we talk about PERS, we kind of blame it on like all that retirement that we're giving to former employees. And I do think we need to emphasize that this is about the state putting the burden back on cities. This isn't about employees who have unfairly been promised retirement, right? These people were promised retirement. It was a fair situation at the time. And now the state has changed their view on things and put some pressure on the cities. And I'm wondering about the benefit of looking at PERS differently and having some kind of lobbying effort on the side of the city and what we could do to join with other communities to lobby at the state level to get some relief from this PERS effort as we think about revenue. And that's it.
Thank you. Well stated. And Councilmember Davis, sir.
Yes, thank you. I support the visiting journalists. After I left my employment with Caltrans, I was a professional travel writer for about 10 years. And I know the value of sharing personal experiences. And that's what a visiting journalist, as Jennifer said, is chosen very carefully. You don't just take any Yahoo who sends a postcard and says, I'd like to come and stay for free for a couple of weeks. But the personal experiences are what resonate with people. People like to read stories about what other people have done, and so I really support that part of the program. I think that investing general fund money in other areas of economic development than tourism, in addition to tourism, is going to help us more in the long run. Erica listed some of the things that people think are important for the city to do right now. Action teams promoting opportunity sites, broadband, expediting permits. And those are things that can help us diversify our economy. Tourism is number one with us right now because it's an easy thing for us to sell. But when there's an economic downturn or a Highway 1 closure, we're very vulnerable, and the more we can diversify ourselves, and I think that's where we should be investing our funds for the future. And again, the vacation rental and RV revenue is very significant. Our neighboring cities and the unincorporated part of the county are all at 2%. And at 2% with VRs and RVs, that's $132,000. And that is that offsets if the full $160,000 were brought back to the general fund, that could be offset. And the option B, which is a one-year program, that's something I would favor just because we can try it out, see what kind of success we get, and then reassess a year from now. So those are my thoughts. And I really do look forward to the TBID board looking at this very carefully and understanding that, as the mayor said, this is a game changer. I think the survival of our city is at risk if we don't make some major revenue changes. So
thank you. My closing comment will be that I do believe that the T-bid should look at the full resolution 03-16. There are some items that haven't been done routinely, so I would just ask that in addition, or that they consider looking at the full resolution and the intent of that, and making sure that they're meeting and we're meeting the intent of that as well. That would be my closing comment. So hopefully you've captured all that, and if you have any questions of us, it's not clear, we'll be happy to answer it. And this is discussion only. So with that, unless there's anything else, I'll move on to the next item. Item C3, thank you for that robust conversation. Item C3, this is adoption of resolution of intention to approve the amendment to the California Public Employees Retirement System contract to implement cost sharing for local police members and Morro Bay Peace Officers Association. It's an action item, and I will turn that over to our esteemed city clerk, Dana. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'll go ahead and get started while they get the presentation up. We're here to discuss a resolution of intent to approve an amendment to the CalPERS contract to implement cost sharing for the Morro Bay Peace Officers Association. In September 2018, the City Council adopted Resolution 70-18, approving a two-year MOU with the Peace Officers Association that provided the following changes for fiscal year 18-19. A 2% COLA increase retroactive to July 1st, along with, upon approval of a contract amendment with PERS, members would receive an additional 1% COLA increase in exchange for 1% employee cost sharing, where the members would pay 1% of the employer's share of their retirement benefit. Staff initiated the contract amendment process with CalPERS in October of 2018, anticipated that would be a 90-day process. We received approval from CalPERS in late March, to move forward with the contract amendment. Doesn't look like we're going to have a PowerPoint, so sorry about that.
AGP? Oh, he's working on it.
I think he's working on it.
Didn't see it there.
The cost share arrangement has already been agreed to by the city and the POA through the MOU approval in September. The process that we're beginning tonight is to amend the contract with PERS to implement that change. There's essentially four steps involved. Step one is adopting the resolution of intent to amend the contract. Step two is the members that are affected will have a secret ballot election, and that is ongoing now. Assuming those members approve the proposed plan, staff will bring back introduction of an ordinance to amend the contract on April 23rd. That ordinance would be adopted on May 14th, and both the 1% COLA increase and 1% cost sharing would take effect June 15th. I should note that the MOU also provided language for a potential cost sharing change again in 1920. That's dependent on the city meeting its revenue targets, which is unknown at this time. So the recommendation is to adopt Resolution 2519, declaring the intent to amend the contract with CalPERS to implement cost sharing with the Peace Officers Association.
Great. Thank you for that report and for the staff report. I'll open it up for council questions, starting with Councilmember Davis. Sir, any questions, sir?
I do not have any questions, and I'm ready to proceed with a motion at any time.
Great. Councilmember Addis?
No questions.
Councilmember Hiller?
No questions.
We'll open it up for public comment. Any members of the public wishing to come forward to speak on item C3, please do so now. Looking deeply into the background, I see none. Thusly, I will close public comment and entertain a motion. I have no questions either.
I move that Council adopt Resolution Number 25-19, giving notice of the City's intention to approve an amendment to the contract between the City and the Board of Administration of the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, to provide employee cost sharing of 1% for local police members in the Morro Bay Peace Officers Association, MBPOA, for fiscal year 2018/19, FY 2018/19.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Davis for the staff recommendation, second by Councilmember Addis. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
I do believe the next item on the agenda is future agenda items. I wanted to just call council's attention to a document that you hopefully received from the city manager outlining the significant number of items that we have accumulated on the agenda that we will be bringing forward. So with that spirit, I will entertain future agenda items, just with that spirit noted. So any future agenda items? None? Oh, my goodness. Councilmember Heller, any?
No.
And I have none either. I do believe this may be a record in terms of council meeting time. That concludes our business for this evening. I will call the adjournment. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019 at 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall, located at 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. Thank you all. Good evening.